in association with Newsarama. It's time again for Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we speak with artist Don Kramer. After a brief stint at Caliber and Marvel, Kramer came to DC Comics and made his mark on books like the Dr. Fate miniseries with Christopher Golden. Then he moved on to JSA with Geoff Johns, trading art duties with Leonard Kirk. Kramer was set to work on the 52 project, but when J.H. Williams had to bow out from doing the Detective Comics Monthly with Paul Dini, Kramer stepped in and came up with a bunch of great Batman stories, including one of the most recent great Joker stories between Tim Drake and the Joker. He's also teamed up with James Robinson on Batman's Face the Face. And Don now trades arcs with Rags Morales on Nightwing with Peter Tomasi. And this week, they're starting a new Nightwing arc featuring the long-awaited confrontation between Dick Grayson and Harvey Dent. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find savings of 35% or more on trade paperbacks, original graphic novels, essentials, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. Right now, you can get the Batman Death in the City trade paperback, which includes that Joker story I was just talking about. The trade paperback retails at $14.99, but at InStockTrades.com, you can get it for $9.44. And don't forget about InStockTrades' sister site discount comic book service at DCBService.com for all your pre-ordered monthly needs. For all the details, check them out online, InStockTrades at InStockTrades.com and discount comic book service, DCBService.com. Don is a Chicagoan, although while I'm up in the north side, he's down in the south side, and way down south where the Bears are in training camp. And that's where our conversation begins.
Well, this is a long time coming because I know I've bugged you at every Wizard convention for about, I think, at least consistently the last at least 3 years.
Yeah, well, I haven't moved. I'm still here, you know, so You're getting down to me here eventually.
Well, no, this is good. And I'm glad we're doing this while the Bears are in training out of Bourbon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, a thrill. You know, not really, but it's kind of cool every once in a while to see them around town, I suppose. But,
does it disrupt just general life or anything?
Yeah, around here it does a little bit. Things just get a little more hectic as far as, like, traffic and stuff goes. But it really doesn't affect me because, you know, I don't get out much.
Well, yeah, you're at the drawing board.
Yeah, working from home, so it doesn't really bother me all that much, though. But I'm aware of it, and like my kids, I want to go see them once or something like that. So I'll take them usually, for a day or something. Or,
well, right now I know you're immersed in the Batman world because you're working on Nightwing. But as we were setting up, you mentioned that you saw the Batman film, so I think right off the bat I should get your review and what you thought of the film.
I was very impressed with how it was done. I mean, story-wise, it couldn't have been done better. I'm just super impressed with, the way they portrayed the Joker and Two-Face and Batman. You know, they got their motivations down as, actually as good or better than I've ever seen in any comic book, you know. So
wow.
It was very, very, very well put together.
What do you think of the film version of Batman and the armor? Because, you're a guy that obviously, Batman's in good hands when you're drawing him and everything, and I wonder, that's just such a different look, and I can appreciate it from a logic standpoint, but as an artist, what do you think of the costume?
Yeah, I guess that's one thing that's always grated on me a little bit, when you see the movie. I've always wanted to see the costume just a little bit more, look a little bit more like the comic book,
Sure.
I mean, because the comic book, it's implied that the armor is underneath. And otherwise, they really don't show it,
Yeah.
And in some ways, I wish I could see the Batman from the comic book on the movie screen.
Have you seen that fan movie, Dead End?
That's what I wish we could get a Batman to look like in a movie.
That's a tall order. I can appreciate finding a competent actor that has that build.
That's the hard part, to find an actor that can handle all of that. And I think that's where they're... there's always been that problem. Christian Bale, is an excellent actor, but he's not built like a 6'6" linebacker or anything. He's got a good build on him though, but he doesn't have that really imposing build that you'd want Batman to have. And I guess that's one of my minor complaints about any movie, I suppose, where you're expecting one of your iconic superheroes to be represented, but
I felt that way about Brandon Routh in that Superman Returns movie.
Agreed. the exact same thing. I mean, you couldn't have done any better than Christopher Reeve when he first appeared. You know, I mean, I thought that was, you know, astoundingly well cast. You know,
well, but, and he had to put the weight on. And,
yes.
And like, kind of willingly, you know, became a weightlifter and put another, like, literally 50 pounds on to
mm-hmm.
be that big. Because he, you know, when he was a soap opera actor, he was a big, tall, thin dude.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I know Brandon put some weight on, too. But, I don't know, I just, you know, like I said, I wish it was a little bit more. You know, he did a good job, you know. But, I mean, as much as we'd like our heroes of... to be represented the same way they are in the comics, it's very difficult to find a competent actor with that build, you know,
sure.
in Hollywood, though. So,
did you see the Hulk?
Yes, I did.
What did you think of the Hulk?
The latest one?
Yeah,
I liked it quite a bit. I've been very satisfied with most all the superhero movies that I've seen this summer. You know, I we were just discussing a little bit ago. I mean, I wish Wanted was a little bit more like the comic, you know.
Okay.
But I understand the reasonings behind it, you know. But I mean, I think it's just because I love the source material so much, you know. I thought it was done so well, but it's still, you know, it was an interesting movie. It was fun, but aside from that, I mean, the other comic book movies, to me, it feels like they're finally getting it right.
Yeah.
You know, after all these years, you know, Marvel is really doing a solid job, and DC has moved up on the scale too, in my book. I mean, with the way Batman, The Dark Knight was done, that's by far, to me, the best superhero movie I've ever seen so far.
Wow, that's cool. Well, you see, that makes me want to see it even more. So
yeah, you're definitely going to have to see it very soon.
Well, I was sick as a dog last weekend. Otherwise, I would have gone. But I think probably while everyone else is in San Diego, I'll. Managed to grab one show of The Dark Knight at least.
Yeah, you'll have to give me a call. Let me know what you think.
Oh, definitely. How about Hellboy 2? Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I'm a fan of Hellboy, and some of my friends have worked in the Hellboy world, so I was interested to see, you know, some of the characters, because a couple of my friends, Chris Golden and Tom Snegoski, were, you know, working on the BPRD stuff and some of the characters that they had, you know, in the script and the stories there, they were on the screen, and that was kind of neat to see, you know.
Chris, so, you and Chris worked together on the Dr. Fate series, right?
Yes, we did. And matter of fact, Chris is the one who kind of really, you know, got me involved with the comic. I mean, I was always involved in comics, though, but I had a nice, secure job, and I was content to work on a story at the time that I was working on with Tom that hopefully someday we'll see fruition. But anyway, I was working on that, and Chris came to me with a Dr. Fate story and kind of basically gave the opportunity to jump ship. And, you know, he was saying, you know, this is what you've always really wanted, you know, is to work in comics. So, you know, here's your opportunity. And I did. I jumped at it, and I took it, and gave up my family business job that I was working for my father and jumped into comics to try to make a go of it. So so I can thank Chris for that.
Wow, man. So that was 5 years ago.
Was it? I don't even recall how many years. But well, yes, it's been a little while. Yes.
Or maybe a little more than five, because it was, I guess, around 2003.
Yeah, must be. You know, I mean, I don't really, you know, in all honesty, I didn't really keep track of the years. And it's kind of funny, because before I was also working on a one Marvel book I did. For Marvel, and I was doing that on the side with kind of an open deadline, and then I had just finished that up when Chris came to me with that story. And
was that the Thing?
Yes, it was the Thing story that I had worked on with Ron Zimmerman.
Okay.
And, it was a lot of fun. It was cute, you know. I mean, the sad part is, I mean, some of the best parts of his script kind of wound up on the cutting room floor due to editing and the way things were changed around and due to Marvel Universe politics and all that, though. But
okay.
What did come out was really good, you know. But what Ron originally had on the plate was even better, I felt. But it's kind of a disappointment to see some of that story, you know, kind of disappear, because it was really good.
Yeah, I felt bad for Ron, because I thought, like Chuck Austin, I think he was a little overly maligned by, you know, just a small but vocal group of fans. And I think to his credit, he's the one who just said, you know, I don't need this crap.
Yeah, I mean, tell you what, I mean, it can be tough, you know. I mean, sometimes if you let it get to you, you have a certain segment of the fanboy population, you know, the fans of comics. They,
sure.
Some of them can be, you know, really rude and actually, you know, make personal attacks on people. And I think Ron, actually, after a time, almost felt personally attacked by a lot of this. And so he decided to step away, you know. I got to admit, I mean, I read a lot of his stories, and I found them, you know, quite funny. Not everything was to my liking, but he was a very talented writer.
Yeah.
And just never really was able to, you know, get the fans on his side and move in. He was, you know, a little bit more on the humorous side, and sometimes that just doesn't take with the fans, especially, you know, if they feel you're, I don't know, perhaps maybe poking fun at them as opposed to, you know, laughing with, I suppose.
Sure, sure.
And maybe a few times he might have done that. I don't know. Either way, I loved his work. It was a lot of fun. So.
No, I'm with you. Now then, when did the JSA gig come up?
I had just finished Dr. Fate, and I had called up Pete, and he was the one editor that I had been working with on Dr. Fate over at DC, and I was like, well, you know, I'm looking for work, and he gave me the, you know, some ideas as to, you know, some other editors to call around and everything, though, but then he called me back shortly afterwards, and, you know, a position had opened up for JSA. And he asked me to move on there, and I was totally shocked by that. You know, I was thrilled and shocked at the same time. You know, and because it was a major jump. You know, I mean, I've, you know, as far as artwork goes, I mean, I consider myself a decent artist. You know, but when you're jumping into a work like JSA. And not to mention, I mean, I was just getting acclimated to working professionally on deadline basis.
Okay.
Where, you know, you're trying to crank out so many pages a week, and I literally, you know, had to learn on the job there, you know, and it was a very interesting and also a very enjoyable experience. I couldn't have had a better time, you know, by being paired with Jeff, you know, working on JSA, because Jeff is, you know, just the artist's writer. You know, I mean, he's everything you hear about Jeff is probably true. I mean, everything good as far as working with him goes, it's probably true.
What does he do for artists?
Well, the one thing I will say is that he really includes you in the whole creative process that you don't get from most writers. I mean, there are other writers that do it, though, but Jeff and I, when we were working, I mean, he called me up and introduced himself to me, and he decided that we were just going to go over a few things, and he asked me, you know, you've read JSA now, what do you think, what do you feel is missing in the story, and what do you feel you would like to see? You know, what would you like to have happen in this story? And we got to discussing some stuff, and we were right on the same page when it came to all the ideas and things. I mean, it was what he had in mind already. And I asked him for a few things. I mean, story-wise, I was like, you know, there's a lot of, after reading this, I've had a lot of beats and moments that, you know, I would like you, you know, to eventually see, you know, while I'm working on it. And he was able to provide some of them, you know, and other times he just, you know, created some things that were far better, you know. But he's a fantastic guy to work with, you know. He was able to include me in, like, he would call me up just with the idea of the story.
Okay.
That he had in mind, you know, okay, we're going to go in this direction, you know. And sometimes some of these ideas, they would disappear, you know. I mean, he had some ideas that he would love to do, and the next thing you know, the story changed and was in flux, you know, and a lot of things change and happen. But he would always call me up with this and letting me know, you know, what he was thinking and allowing me to add my two cents. And sometimes he'd take it and sometimes he wouldn't, you know, but it really felt like a collaborative effort. It was really fun, and it kept me, you know, really enjoying working on that book. And it's a very tough book to work on, you know, with all those characters. It can be very daunting.
I can appreciate that. Yeah, that does give the artist a lot to draw, and every character's movement has to, you know, make a point and be significant, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about it that, you know, I mean, I really like what Dale's doing right now, and just, you know, to put together such a huge team like that, though, and be able to give them all their own individual voices and their own individual personalities with their own stances and the way they carry themselves, it can be very difficult, you know, and sometimes as an artist I felt I succeeded and sometimes I felt I failed, but all in all, I mean, I'm fairly happy with, you know, the work that we did together, you know. I mean, I, you know, like I said, those are some of my favorite times, you know, was working with Jeff.
Absolutely.
On JSA. It was a lot of fun.
Well, you were alternating with Leonard Kirk, and I think both, and I guess, was Keith Champagne the anchor for both of you guys?
Yes, he was. Well, I mean, I'm not sure if he was all the time. I know he inked Leonard, and then when I jumped on, they kept Keith on as
okay.
anchor, and we worked together. So.
Well, and that's I was going to say, you and Len were a good combination, and I see them doing the same thing now on Justice League in terms of pairing artists that have similar styles that complement each other. And I think it's only going to help a book, A, stay on schedule and give you guys the time to put in top-notch work. And really, man, I mean, I'm glad you're proud of your JSA work, because Black Rain, for example, that was you, and that was a wonderful arc in particular. The Hour Man arc with Rick and his dad, I remember, in particular, and, of course, the Android as well.
Oh, yeah.
Those are some great JSA stories. I mean, this current run is fantastic.
Yeah.
Believe me, I'm a fan as well, and I really love the directions it's going in. But I remember, and I think most JSA fans will remember as well, when they said, well, we're going to stop JSA for a while, we're going to come back with a number one. And everyone's like, why? I'm like, you know, the run that you guys had was already a big hit. And, you know, I mean, obviously it's easier to start and generate sales again with a new number one. But I think most JSA fans were definitely on for your guys' run as well, and will say there was nothing wrong with that book.
Oh,
and,
no,
you know,
no.
The only problem was, I guess, everybody was busy with Infinite Crisis and 52,
yeah.
And that's why they had to kind of stop the run for a while.
Well, yeah, they were. Yeah, Jeff was very busy with Infinite Crisis at the time, and I was going through a lot of changes. And at that particular time, they had been talking about it for a little while, and ultimately, I mean, it worked out for the best for them, because it, you know, starting off with that number one, it gives, you know, everyone a chance as fans to try this book again. You know, a lot of people are kind of hesitant to do that.
Sure.
And, you know, with the sales, they were very successful with it, you know, and not to mention picking up right where they left off. I mean, they really didn't miss a beat, you know. So, I mean, it's a very strong book, and I knew some of the ideas that they're still working on and doing. And so I was kind of privy to it. I mean, Jeff and Alex kind of had a plan for a few years now, you know, what they wanted to do.
Okay.
And they had talked a little bit about it with me before, you know, before I was no longer on the book.
I see.
And I've, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do, because, I mean, it's all coming to fruition. It's all, you know, such a fantastic, epic story, I think, you know, I mean, because it's, I mean, I, in some ways I want to call it this, in some ways I don't, but it's kind of like Kingdom Come 2.
Oh, definitely,
know,
definitely.
What Alex, I guess, would have done, along with Jeff, you know, and some of their plans, I guess, for that, though, and, you know, I don't know, you know, where one's plan begins and another ends, but the story that they're putting out is quite solid. You know?
Oh, absolutely. Well,
yeah.
let's talk about your run again for a little bit more, because I wanted to focus on, like, Black Adam, because I think both you and Jeff really shined on that character. I mean, that's really...
He
went up a level. I mean, he was always an interesting villain, but I really think the characterization that you guys combined on has really made that character an A-list villain and a much different character.
No, well, I have to say, I mean, that was, you know, that was Goyer and John and Jeff, you know, David Goyer and Jeff Johns on the characterization of that. I mean, I came into that as it had already been, you know, kind of planned out. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I absolutely loved it. I mean, that was, you know, I thought they gave him a layer to his character that was, you know, kind of needed to be added to him rather than being the one-dimensional, you know, villain that he was before.
Sure.
And Black Adam was always a very interesting villain, and by adding those other aspects to him, all of a sudden, you know, he became a, you know, a really, you know, interesting top A-list villain as far as I'm concerned.
Definitely, and a sympathetic hero at times as well.
Exactly. I mean, he's the anti-hero, you know.
I mean,
he's Superman with the Punisher's mentality, you know, and I really found that interesting, you know. I mean, and not to mention, he's a man that a lot of people can understand his motivations.
Exactly.
You know? And that's what makes a really good hero. Or, I mean, excuse me, that's what makes a really good villain, is a villain that that at times you really can't blame him for doing what he's doing.
Yep.
You know, and when you can understand the villain, I mean, those are the best villains you could ever have in your stories. So.
Well, it's almost too, and I always hate to, you know, go across town and bring up a character from the other side of the street, but I have to because there's definitely a streak of Namor in this characterization of Black Adam as well.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. You know, I mean, Namor and you know, his motivations, I mean, he's, matter of fact, I mean, it's very similar to Namor in a sense there, you know. And to a little bit of the similar extent, Magneto, you know, with his race of mutants that he wishes to protect, essentially.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, with those, you know, villains, I mean, you can all relate to, you know, to people that are basically very caring to the people that they are, you know, sworn to protect, but will mete out, you know, basically vigilante justice to anybody that that could even possibly threaten to harm those people, you know. So, yeah, they're some of my favorite villains. That's what I can say. I mean, you're naming off the favorites. So.
There you go. Well, and I also like the fact, too, that Black Adam, especially given today's times, is a very resonant character. And that those people that he protects look pretty familiar to anyone that picks up a newspaper these days. And,
I agree. I mean, Jeff and I, when we were talking about this, and when it first came out, the Iraq War had just begun. You know, had just begun when he was writing this and putting this out. And I wouldn't say it was a commentary on it, but it was pretty interesting timing. You know,
okay.
But at the same time, we didn't really stress, you know, we didn't really choose a side as far as, you know, what was right or what was wrong, you know, because there are a lot of gray areas on both sides.
Sure.
You know, and especially at the time when we were, you know, when Jeff was writing it. And, yeah, I mean, I thought that reflected well in the story, too, because in the end, you were looking at Black Adam, and you can't really blame him for some of the things he was doing.
Absolutely.
And you're looking at the JSA, and you can't blame them for what they did either.
Sure.
You know? And that's what makes for a very good story, because, I mean, that's, everybody has their motivations, and, you know, when they're both legitimate, that's when the conflicts become most interesting.
And Adam Smasher being in the middle and having to, really be
forced
torn.
To choose.
What's up?
Forced to choose.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly, and really understanding both sides and you know, knowing that he was going to betray a friend no matter what decision he made.
Yeah, he was in a catch-22, you know, no matter what he did, he was going to hurt somebody. And so, yeah, I mean, he's another character that you can look at sympathetically, and I guess in some ways I wish that the JSA as characters would look at him a little bit more sympathetically at times, too, but at the time, I also understand why our man was really pissed at him. You know, I mean, he was injured, you know, to the point of death, and so I can understand why he was, you know, had his issues with Black Adam and Adam Smasher. So,
No, plus that sequence in JSA 75, and I don't know how much you did of that and how much Len did, and I know you guys kind of jammed on that book together.
Yeah, and Steve Sadowski.
And Steve Sadowski, that's true, the inker. And was he the artist, or was he drawing as well, or was he
inking? Yeah, we all did a triple, we all did a third of the book.
Wow.
I was originally slated to do the whole story, and I had some personal issues. I was, suddenly a divorce was thrust upon me, and the deadlines became too difficult to do. And Pete was more than gracious and just brilliantly came up with, a way of handling it to where the fans wouldn't be upset, and not to mention brought back, all the artists that had worked on the series, and it was very cool, in that respect, and the fans really appreciated it, seeing Steve Sadowski come back again and Leonard Kirk, and I really appreciated the help in a rough time of my life, and it was good, so the story was a very sound story, I'm disappointed that it didn't get the chance to do it all, but
sure.
But it was, I'm proud to have been a part of that book.
Well, and I know that you kind of had a journeyman post-JSA period where you were filling in where you could and getting sporadic issues, and you did issues of 52 and things. And one gig that came up that became a pretty consistent gig was that run on Detective.
Yeah.
With Paul Dini.
Yeah, I had just finished Batman. Actually, I had done the face-to-face story.
The James Robinson story.
Yes, I was working with Leonard, and we were paired again on that with Leonard handling the detective comics side of it, and I was handling the Batman side, and James was writing the entire story. It was an eight-part story, and that was, a really fun time, and getting to work on probably my favorite character in comics is Batman, and so that was a joy, And then
a strong Two-Face story to boot, so that was kind of cool.
Oh yeah, it was a very good. And Two-Face actually, he is my favorite villain that Batman has, so it was a double joy in that respect, though, to be able to work on Two-Face, and everybody else likes the Joker, but I really enjoy Two-Face because of his, as we were talking about the anti-hero thing, though. With the past relationship with Batman when he was a district attorney,
yep.
that stuff is, the stuff that drives me in a story, and that's why I really like Two-Face more. I got to work on that, and just as I was coming off of that, I was scheduled to be one of the artists on 52.
Okay.
And I had literally had the script in my hand. They had just FedExed it to me, and I had opened it up and had just started reading the first page when I got a call from Pete saying that they needed some help on Detective. And so they were pulling me off of 52 and moving me over to Detective, and I had no complaints there. To get a chance to continue working on Batman was, like I said, it was a joy for me,
Well, and it was great, too, because Dini, and he continues to do this, in his run on Detective, was doing, one or two issue stories.
Yeah.
So that had to be a lot of fun to get so many different stories and go through a bunch of Batman's rogues pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, that I loved, that was very cool, to be, every issue I was getting, a new Batman villain. There was a couple that I never got a chance to do that I would, love to someday. But
which ones haven't you got a chance yet at?
Like a full-on story of Scarecrow.
Okay.
Or Mr. Freeze is another favorite of mine.
That'd be cool.
that I really like those characters. And but it was really, a really good time working with Paul. Paul writes really well, but we were working together for roughly about a year, I would say.
Wow.
And there were some really good stories there.
I'm holding back one because I want to talk about it, and it's a classic. And, I had totally forgotten about your work on Face-to-Face, and I'm glad you brought that up because it's ironic timing that we're talking when the Batman movie is out. And you had two significant stories with the two villains in The Dark Knight.
And, thanks.
So, yeah, I mean, let's talk about Sleigh Ride, because really, man, that is, you know, every time someone says, we've got to kill the Joker because there are no other greats, you know, every great story has been told. And then, seriously, Dini and you come up with Sleigh Ride, and it's this fantastic story. And for people who don't remember, it was, you know, Jason Todd in the car.
Not Jason, but
Tim Drake in the car, that's right. Bound and gagged with the Joker driving.
Yeah.
And how is he going to, you know, get out of this? And, you know, the Joker's got him at gunpoint, and how is Tim going to get out of this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I got that script, I read it and became giddy. You know, I knew it was, as far as story-wise, I mean, that was gold. All I had to do was just do my best not to screw it up, you know.
Well.
I'm really proud of the work I did on that, you know. I mean, I was really happy. And the ironic thing of that story, too, is, you know, when Paul had sent me the script, we normally have like normally comics are 22 pages, you know, and he had misnumbered the pages and he had only written 21 pages worth.
Oh, wow.
And I just kind of called them up and said, you know, we're short a page, but I got a way to handle it, you know, and we'll do it this way.
Oh, that's cool.
And they said, fine, that's cool, you know, and, you know, I just kind of, you know, rearranged a few things, and as far as just the way panels were laid out, I mean, all the story was still there, and nothing had changed there, but it allowed me actually a little breathing room so I could throw in a few bigger panels, you know, here and there.
Okay.
And that's what made it, you know, more open for me to really enjoy. So.
Well, that's funny, because it's obviously a very claustrophobic setting, and I was going to say, like, kind of a cool gimmick film or television episode. You know,
it would make a great, you know, single episode of a TV show if they ever did a
30-minute
series,
Batman short. Absolutely, man.
Oh, yeah. It would be a very intense, very good story.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, man, because, again, I understand that Paul wrote the script and everything, but you still had to come up with the visuals, and it was this very intense little story, and it really worked. It was really great, and that was the thing. Like I said, man, that's perfect example of where I'm like, this is why the Joker doesn't need to die, and you just have to put it in the right creative hands to come up with a cool story.
Oh, well, you know, when anybody complains about any of these characters, there's always, you know, another writer out there with another story that is, you know, going to create gold again.
Yep.
You know, these characters, and my belief on, you know, essentially all of these Marvel and DC characters is there are really no bad characters out there. You know, you just have to find the right writer with the right story to bring bring these characters to life again. You know, sometimes we get the stories seem standard or a little run of the mill, and then every once in a while, you know, someone will come in with a fresh take, like Paul did with the Joker here, and it's, you know, you realize what was so good about that character to begin with, you know, and Paul did it, and Paul does it every time he gets a hold of the Joker. The Joker is just a fantastic character for him.
Well, definitely. Well, how would you describe your style of art, Don, and how did you arrive at it, do you think?
Oh, boy, I don't know.
Is that the big essay question? Is it just drawing just kind of led you to the way that you draw, basically?
It was with the people that I was working with and how I was trying to, you know, get across what I was trying to do, you know. And that's essentially kind of how my art style formed, you know. I mean, and I don't know, I've always been kind of, when it comes to art styles, and I've never ever seen that. It's just the way we do things. You know, it's kind of like your thumbprint, you know. I mean,
okay.
It's just the way we handle things. And I don't know. You know, I wouldn't describe my art style in any particular way. I just, you know, do it the way I do it. And it was kind of formed by the people that I work with and how I was trying to get some of my ideas across. And you know, with the inkers and colorists and I guess that's where it came from.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. The before DC, you did a little bit of stuff at Caliber, is that correct?
Very little, yeah.
Okay.
I just did a couple issues with Caliber and a couple of other very small companies. Thorby Comics, which is around for a blink of an eye.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember a few other ones. You know, some I don't care to mention.
Okay.
But yeah, I had bounced around to, with different companies, and I worked with trying to think of with the Pruitt brothers on on Kilroy.
I was going to mention Kilroy, and I wasn't sure if that was something you wanted to mention or not.
No.
Good.
Matter of fact, that was the first opportunity that I had to work on a character that I actually read that I wanted to work on. And I had read Kilroy before I ever got the opportunity to draw him.
Okay.
And I was looking forward to getting the chance to actually draw him, and it worked out, and I drew the first issue and the first half of a story that was never ever completed, then I began work on other things, So that was right about the time the Caliber was folding up.
Okay.
And closing shop. So
Joe Pruitt gave me the trade of Kilroy.
Oh, yeah?
I saw your stuff in there. Yeah, it was great.
Was that in there? I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Considering the fact that, they were unable to finish that story, I mean, it was, I'm surprised that they wound up putting that in there, though. But it was the opening of Kilroy's origin story, actually, though. And I really enjoyed working on that. That was a lot of fun.
It was cool. It was, kind of a Spectre, kind of Spirit of Vengeance sort of character, but definitely a little more grounded in reality.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Spectre meets the Crow.
Pretty
or
much,
something
yeah.
like that, I mean, he has this kind of like godlike power to just appear where he is needed and then, mete out his brand of justice. So it was a very interesting character, and it's too bad that they were unable to finish the story there. But working on that was one of my things that I used as a calling card to get hired with Marvel and then eventually DC.
That's cool.
Yeah,
well, let's talk about Nightwing now, because you're switching off with Rags Morales.
Mm-hmm.
And now Peter, who was your editor before, is now writing. And how is it working with Peter as a writer?
He's, I don't talk to him as much as a writer as I used to when he was an editor. He's at home right now and working. Actually, I think he's out in San Diego right now. But he's adjusting to the freelance lifestyle here, and he's got his nose to the grindstone working. So he's writing some very good stuff. I have to admit. We're working on this Two-Face story.
Yes,
that's part of the Batman RIP thing that's going on. And it is, literally to me the best Nightwing story I've, ever worked on, or and at least what I wanted to work on when I first got the opportunity to work on Nightwing. This is the type of story that I wanted to do.
Well, that's cool, because it's, obviously the matchup with Dick Grayson against Two-Face is something I think fans have been waiting for a long time, and I don't think there have been any significant stories since they kind of they changed over the origin, I guess, or maybe not the origin, but basically the backstory, saying that Two-Face kind of took even kind of a perverse pleasure in torturing Dick.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the thing that I find really cool about this. I mean Dick really hates him.
Yeah,
he doesn't have the. He doesn't have the sympathy that Batman does,
yeah.
That Bruce does. He does not like him at all. And you are made aware of that from early on, in this story. And he's forced to deal with him and has to deal with him throughout the story, So it's interesting. I don't want to give too much away in the story, because I really do think that Pete's telling a really solid story here. And I don't want to give anything away, but the thing that I really like about this is he's bringing a certain amount of grittiness to this story that wasn't really in there in Free Fall. When he was doing Free Fall, it was kind of more like a James Bond take on Nightwing. and which is really enjoyable. I mean, he's running around the globe, you know, trying to take out Talia's, you know, little things that were going on.
The League of Assassins and everything.
Yeah, the League of Assassins and dealing with the whole, you know, dealing with the winged, you know, clones and all of
yes.
that, though. And in this one, though, it's a lot more street level, a lot more violent, you know, and I got to admit, I kind of appreciate those type of stories
That's
a little
cool.
bit more, you know.
Well, and I know that Nightwing fans feel that for a long time, and I'm not including Pete in this group, but that there's really been kind of a, you know, question of what is DC's take on the character? And even I know Dan DiDio, just through, you know, what we've now learned about some of the original directions for things like Infinite Crisis, and that, you know, the question came up, is Dick Grayson necessary in the DC universe? What is his purpose today if there already is a Robin and he is not going to be the next Batman? And I think that's a fair question. But like I said, you go to Jeff Johns, you go to Mark Waid, and I'm guessing if you go to Pete Tomasi, they all can tell you good reasons why Nightwing needs to be around.
Oh, yeah. I think I could express that,
Well,
too.
That's what I'm hoping for.
You know, I mean, for me, Nightwing is, I could probably say this. He's probably the only hero that I can think of right off the top of my head. I mean, besides maybe other Teen Titans. But they were raised to, he was raised to be a hero. He was trained from the time he was, you know, was taken in by Bruce, but he doesn't have that brooding angst that
uh-huh.
Bruce Wayne has. And you could really study that dichotomy of, you know, having your teacher as your father, as your, you know, as your, you know, mentor and all of that, that you really can't with other characters out there. You know, I mean, he does have the ability to go. I mean, he grew up with the DCU. I mean, he knows everybody.
Yes.
He's dealt with everybody through Batman. And so he has more of a connection, I guess you could say, with the old and the new generation that I don't think anybody really has, you know, in the DCU like Dick does, you know?
No, I understand. Because you're right. I think even Wally, as much as Wally's been allowed to, through death, kind of assume the mantle and be on the front line with the rest of the Justice League, I think you're right. I think Dick is really kind of the heir apparent that just hasn't had that opportunity, has had very few rare opportunities to show his importance. And it's funny how the writers and the fans seem to know that. Because, and I think from the fan standpoint, and I'm sure you feel this way, we grew up with Dick.
Yeah.
And we, you know, when we were kids reading him, he was still Robin. And
mm-hmm.
we saw him become Nightwing, and as we got older, he kind of got older. And so, you know, I think there is that wish fulfillment that I think the teen sidekick was always there to provide for the young reader has gone up a level with the original Titans now being adults themselves. But in particular, I'd say Wally and Dick, and maybe Roy now because of what Brad Meltzer's done with Roy.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, though, I think, you know, when it comes to all the Teen Titans, I think there's probably a little more something expected of Dick than of all the other ones because he was trained by Batman. I mean, Batman is probably the most intense superhero you're, you know, ever going to find anywhere.
Sure.
And because he was trained by the best, you know, the one that everyone looks up to, I think there's something more expected of Dick than there is for, you know, for Roy or Wally or anybody, you know. I mean, I think Dick, you know, if he messes up or something, he's going to get that, you know, disapproving father, you know, looking over his shoulder. And I suppose a lot of us can relate to that, where, you know, you really don't get that as much, or at least as intensely, you know, with the other titles, I wouldn't think, you know.
I think you're right, because, yeah, well, first of all, Barry was always a good guy anyway,
mm-hmm.
and Wally always seemed eager to please. Roy,
he's more like the good uncle,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he was there for you, but he wasn't, he wouldn't be the one to really lambaste Wally if he messed up in any way.
No.
You know?
And Ollie, hell, Ollie screws up more than Roy does.
That's true. You know, he's hot-headed, and you know, he has his issues. But yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, the case where I really think, like I said, Dick is trained to be a hero, and he's always going to be, my view, I mean, appreciated, at the same time trying to live up to Batman, but at the same time, you know, in his own eyes, feeling he probably will never measure up, you know. But in all honesty, I think he's happy with that, though, and content with where he's at.
No, I hear you. And I was going to say, exactly, he is Batman without the baggage, and is much happier in his pursuit than Batman, who is trying to avenge the one crime that will never be avenged.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, he is, in essence, I mean, he is everything that's good about about Batman without, you know, like I said, all the things that are bad about him. You know, I mean, Nightwing was raised to be the hero and, you know, to do the good things, where I think, you know, Bruce kind of had to learn it on his own.
Okay.
And I think that he, you know, still deals with that, where I think, like I said, with Dick, he was taught all along the way, you know, by the best, and he was always learning that, you know, how to handle himself better, where I think, you know, I think Batman, like I said, he had to learn it on his own. We don't get to see all his mistakes because they've never really formed his growing period, you know. They've never really discussed, you know, how he really came to be the Batman. I mean, you get little snippets, but you don't get the whole gist of it, where I think, like I said, with Dick there, he was raised with all of Batman's moral sensibilities, I think, of what should be done, and whereas, like I said, I think Batman has to live with his own mistakes. Personally, that's my view on it.
Now, I know when you're not drawing the book, Rags is drawing. Do you guys ever confer in terms of, you know, how things are going art wise, or is it just, you know, you're working on your arc, he's working on his arc, or specific issues for that matter?
Yeah, we used to confer a lot. I haven't talked to him lately here in a little while because I've just, you know, been so busy with other things, you know, and we really didn't need to coordinate all that much
on
this particular time. But we used to talk quite a bit. I mean, actually, we talked quite a bit for quite a while. We used to talk a lot to each other, you know, but we haven't like recently.
Okay.
You know? But yeah, he's doing his thing on Nightwing, and I'm working on mine, and we're, you know, hopefully, you know, not falling too far behind, unfortunately. We're still kind of getting adjusted, at least I am, you know, trying to get adjusted and, you know, get a handle on our life, on my life, you know, and getting back on track. And, you know, it's been a slow pace, you know, when that comes. I have my lapses, and then I have my days and my weeks where I do really well, and you know, then there are times where it gets difficult, you know, in the summertime with the kids out of school and having to take care of them and everything. So life does play a part in, you know, how we work on our deadlines, and sometimes it can be tough.
Well, I can appreciate that as a freelancer, and I think it is hard, and I can understand, especially working at home and also having to tend to the kids who are at home. So that is hard. Is from a fan standpoint, just from your art style now being on Nightwing, have you heard from the Nightwing fans? Are they?
Not much.
No,
you know, at all. I used to check when I first started working in comics. I used to check the message boards and all of that. And I've, in a sense, you know, don't really check all that often anymore.
I
do go on Jeff's website, and I've developed quite, you know, a number of friends that are on Jeff's site and all of that I see at conventions. You know,
well, and I was going to ask you, at conventions, you know, things are moving along, and people, it seems like you're always busy whenever I see you over there.
Yeah, I get good response, you know, and I, you know, the fans that I meet, I got to admit, you know, when you go out to conventions, I mean, it's really a joy to see the people that read your work, you know, because, you know, as a freelancer, I mean, you know how it is, though. You we're doing all this work alone.
In a room,
one
guy in a room, absolutely, man.
And you usually don't get to see the reaction, you know, and at times you kind of forget, you know, who's out there enjoying, you know, what you're doing. And to see that really kind of reinvigorates you and get your juices flowing again, you
Very
know,
cool.
to know that you're appreciated sometimes out there. You know, everybody would like a little appreciation sometimes.
I understand
guess,
that.
You know, so, in
my circles, I know that you're appreciated because I know people thought very highly of your run on JSA. You know, again, you kind of came in to assist when was it J.H. Williams that couldn't commit to the
Undetective.
And you come out, man, and you come out swinging, and you gave him a good year of books. And I know that people were happy to hear that you and Rags were going to be doing Nightwing because you guys are two top-flight guys that have already proven yourselves.
Oh, good. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
The character's in good hands, and I agree with you. I think Pete's a good writer. I had an interview with Mark Waid recently, and he really gave a very impassioned response to how much he would love the opportunity to have done a monthly Nightwing book. And the powers that be just didn't think of putting him on the book or anything. So,
I remember I did just a two-issue arc with Fabian, and that, I mean, Nightwing is Fabian's favorite character, and he was, you know, making a real pitch to, you know, to try to work on the book as well, you know. So I know there's a lot of creators and a lot of fans out there that would love to work on Nightwing. You know, he's a fantastic character, and I really don't think that, you know, I mean, with Chuck Dixon and everybody else that has already been on the book, you know, that there just seems to be so much more. And there's so many layers to this character that maybe have been touched upon, but, I mean, you could really delve deep into so many aspects of this character that there's a lot more stories to be told.
Well, that's cool. The Two-Face story, I know. I mean, just even the barest descriptions that you've given and that we've seen in previews, I think have everybody excited. Finally, you're seeing Dick and Two-Face. I think everyone's pretty excited about that.
And like I said, I mean, Two-Face is, you know, probably my favorite Batman villain, so it's really fun and getting the opportunity to, you know, to work on him again. And he hasn't been seen all that often in the past few years.
No,
As a matter of fact, I think I drew the last time people saw him was at
Face to Face. I think
it was
right.
The Face to Face story.
And
so,
you know, it disappointed me that that World War III and even during 52, everyone I think was intrigued by the idea that Bruce would trust Harvey enough to put Gotham in his control. And then, you know, while he went away on his little walkabout to find himself, who was going to be watching Gotham City, and for them to pick anybody, for Bruce to pick Harvey Dent to watch over Gotham, I think that's a story that still needs to be told.
I found that really interesting myself, you know, and I was, you know, I was wondering if they were going to touch on that or what they were going to handle in 52 with it. But, yeah, I don't know if James is going to go back to that or not, though, you know, but he's a very good writer, too. He's another guy that I was really, you know, overjoyed to get the. I got to say, I've been blessed with some really great writers.
Hell yes.
To work with, you know. I mean, I've been very fortunate in that respect, because I mean, I've had nothing but you know, the cream of the crop at DC that I've got a chance to work with, you know. So it's been fantastic on that part, you know. I mean, working with James and Paul and, you know, Jeff and now Pete and Fabian and, you know, just, and not to mention starting off with Chris.
I was going to say, even Chris, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, all of those guys, you know, I mean, they've all been, you know, just great guys to work with. For that, I have DC to thank, you know, because I was just, you know, I'm at the whim of DC and, you know, where they were putting me on those books, and I was just very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time.
You know, it's a true story, man. Last summer when I was at San Diego, I was at the Hyatt Bar, and it was either Friday or Saturday night, and I was talking with Jeff Johns. I said, how come Don Kramer doesn't get more, you know, due? And he goes, what are you talking about? He goes, he gets his due. And now that you mentioned the group of writers that you've been working with, yeah, I guess you do. I mean, they paired you with some top flight guys, man. So,
oh yeah,
and again, you've been on some very important arcs. So,
I mean,
I'm glad you're getting the respect you deserve because you're a top artist, man, and I think
well,
you deliver,
you.
Especially on the Bat books. So,
yeah, I mean, I gotta say, I've been quietly taken care of by DC. You know, they've been very, very good to me. You know,
that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, with the people that I've worked with and the characters I've had the opportunity to work on, you know, I really can't complain.
Are there any characters in DC, hero-wise, that you haven't had a crack at yet that you'd like to?
Oh, many. Yeah,
okay.
There's a lot of characters I'd love to get a hold of. You know, Batman was probably my number one.
Okay.
You know, but by all means, you know, I'd love to try, you know, Superman and Green Lantern, and, you know, not to mention, you know, some of the other, you know, some people would call them second-tier characters, but like one of the I was a big fan of when we were working on the JSA-JSA arc. I just loved the character Rip Hunter and how Jeff had taken that character. And, you know, I thought that was a great character to explore more.
That's cool.
And so that's one character that, I'd like. But there's, you know, I could talk about dozens of them, you know. I mean, we're all comic fans. I mean,
sure.
I grew up as a comic fan, and, you know, I mean, I grew up reading Teen Titans. You
okay.
know, and the Marv Wolfman, George Perez stuff. And I used to read Firestorm. That was one of the first books that got me back into comics of
sure.
all things, you know. And so, yeah, there's, you know, a number of characters I'd love to touch on someday.
That's cool, man.
But yeah, and there's a long list. I don't know if I'll ever get a chance to you know, work on all of them or not, you know. So.
Well, I'm glad you're a deadline artist again, and I'm glad that things are working out because
I'm working on it.
Well, you know, it's the good news is the end result is always worth waiting for. So that's continued success, man. I mean, honestly, I'm glad you're having fun on Nightwing, and I look forward to the Two-Face story. And you know, we'll talk again if not at the next Chicago convention, then I'm sure if there's an exceptional story, I'll have to bug you again to come back on and talk about it.
Anytime, John. Always enjoy talking to you.
That's Don Kramer. You know, in my haste to cover all the great stuff he's been doing lately, monthly and interior-wise on the various Batman titles and Nightwing, I forgot to mention a great cover he provided for Tomorrow's on their Flash Companion, featuring the three great Flashes right there, Jay Garrick, Barry Allen, and Wally West. Well, that's all the time we have for Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This episode is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find savings of 35% or more on trade paperbacks, original graphic novels, essentials, archive editions, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. And don't forget, orders of $50 or more, you get free shipping. Check out the trade paperback collection of detective comics called Batman Death in the City, featuring a great story by Paul Dini and Don Kramer revolving around the Joker and Tim Drake. We talked about it on the show. The book retails for $14.99, but at InStockTrades.com, it's just $9.49. And don't forget about their sister site, Discount Comic Book Services, DCBService.com, for your monthly pre-order needs. You'll find major publishers with savings of 40 to 70% off each monthly book. For all the details, check out their websites, InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com. Thanks again. John Suntress reminding you can find Word Balloon at iTunes, at Newsarama.com. Of course, our home site, WordBalloon.com, and you'll find an archive there of over 100 different interviews with comic book creators. If you have any questions or comments about the show, feel free to email me, John@WordBalloon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.